This is David Miller, executive producer of Market to Market. The following is our Market Plus podcast, which is one of two digital-only segments done by us. What you're about to hear is audio from a video discussion we hold in studio following the taping of our regularly scheduled program. If you want to see the faces say these words, visit our website, markettomarket.org, or on our YouTube page of Market to Market. We also have the M2M podcast, which publishes on Tuesdays. This one is a look at the behind-the-scenes work with our stories, as well as conversations with folks involved in agriculture in one of many forms. Now, here's Delaney Howell.
This is the Friday, October 4, 2019 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us are Naomi Bloom, Elaine Cubb, Darren Newsom, and Ted Seifried. Darren, would you like to start off the start of the segment by perhaps offering your condolences to our other analysts for the main portion of the show?
No, not at all.
Okay, I was just going to offer it up there. There was a little heat going on during the main part of the show, but that's what makes it fun. That's why we include you specifically, I think.
Yeah, why not?
Ted, I had to cut you off, though, there, right at the end of the program, talking about the lean hog markets. I also want to weave in this question because it was directed specifically at you this week from Bolt Marketing in Britain, South Dakota. They said, Ted, is it safe to buy the hog market?
What's up, Duane? Again, the question is China going to buy? This is what we were talking about at the end of the segment. Is China going to buy or not? We keep pushing our hopes back and we keep getting disappointed. The good news that we're seeing fairly decent export sales on a weekly basis, other countries coming in, Mexico in particular. I think getting in front of the concern that China's going to come and buy everything or demand displacement, you know, maybe having a hard time going down to South America and buying products. So, yeah, you're running right down into some key support in the hogs. I think it is going to bounce from here, but whether it really takes off to the upside is really China dependent and goes along with what's going to happen at the trade talks this week. But Duane, I would say you could probably tell your clients that Ted says you can try to buy hogs here, but keep a fairly tight stop. Hope football's going well.
We've got one other question about the hog market from Everyday is Beef Day. I like that Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Wanting to know, could someone just explain the latest moves in this hog market?
I think it's partly spread trading going on, giving the day traders a little some excitement to do between October and December contract. I've been watching that spread pretty close. You can, if you're Johnny on the money, you can pick up, you know, buck or two every other day on it. Other than that, to Ted's point, it is a battle between overproduction in general. That's the reality of what we have right now in our country, and then the hopes of continued export demand. So exports, yep, up 16%. Overall, from a year ago. However, if those exports at all falter in some capacity, we just have the theme of overproduction.
Anything to add, Darren or Elaine?
Yeah. Well, yeah, the slaughter numbers are huge every day, 488,000, and this is going to continue. But when you do look far enough out, you're looking at like $90 in June contract. So at some point, someone is expecting this to change or there to be enough demand to swallow up those huge slaughter numbers.
Okay. I'm going to move back to our discussion with the grains and back looking a little bit more closely at some of these reports. I know, Darren, that's not your favorite subject, but we've got a question here from Bradley in Upland, Nebraska, wanting to know, he says specifically, I wonder how much, if any, of lower USDA carryout numbers are grains lost to flooding and storage losses piling on from last year's wet crop on the ground instead of a smaller 2018 crop?
It's possible. I don't think that'd be a big portion. You know, I mean, I remember doing this back in the spring, you know, coming up with the math of what it could be, and it really wasn't. I think the absolute highest number we were talking about, it was like 40 million bushels, but I think we're a lot closer, like 4 million bushels. I think simply, I mean, for soybeans, we know the difference, right? I mean, we revised production lower from last year. They were too high on production last year. Okay. For corn, you know, that'll get lumped into the feed and residual category. But I would suggest that the USDA was probably too high on production last year and feed was stronger than what we were expecting. But there could be some of that too. So I'm not going to say no to that.
And to follow up on that too, obviously this growing season has been quite an unusual one, and we thought perhaps Mother Nature would be nice to us during harvest season. Maybe she's not going to. It's still wet. And Elaine, I heard you mentioning before the show started that frost is obviously a huge concern. At what point does it turn to perhaps seeing a rally because of the delay in harvest?
I'm not too worried about it right now because the delay, we're still 10 percentage points behind in maturity levels. Well, actually, the maturity, there's like 50% mature when it should be 3/4 mature by now. But big deal. I mean, you've got the corn in most of the northern corn belt has black layered, and you could have a frost now, and it'll be all right. The delay from rain in the center of the corn belt, your Iowa areas, that's inconvenient. But since the crop's not ready to go yet anyway, you know, at this point, it's not a huge concern. Ask me this again a week from now, 2 weeks from now, if you still have rain delays then you're starting to lose quality problems, then maybe it starts to be a problem.
Actually, the news in Madison just yesterday did a special on the grain that's sprouting in the fields around us.
That'd be a problem.
Yeah, so it obviously just depends on where you live, very much so. But we're hearing a little bit more in bits and pieces, but I think we just live in a rainforest lately as far as Wisconsin with all the rain that we've had. But it'll really be important to watch going forward. And you're right, every weather forecast every week is going to be potentially market moving if the delay continues. Or even I'm wondering if producers will try to let their grain stand in the fields for winter. And then you have a whole other issue of being snowed on and how to even get to it. So it's just you want 2019 to come to a close, you know.
We have a lot of on-farm corn and soybeans right now. Right, so the longer we push back harvest, maybe the longer we push back a lot of grain coming to market and putting pressure on cash prices. Now, what could happen, though, is if you look at corn, with the basis already being tight, harvest delays, I think, could start to make some local end users a little bit nervous and really push basis up, which could help the futures market. But I don't think an extended delay in harvest is super bullish for either corn and soybeans just because we have on-farm stocks. We have other reasons to be bullish, and I think that's what's really manifesting in the market right now.
Okay, Darren, I didn't mean to put you in timeout. You're allowed to speak as well.
No, I mean, I agree with what Ted's saying. And it, you know, if we do, and you know what Naomi and Elaine are saying, if we do push harvest back because of weather, I certainly agree that this is going to, you know, we've got strong basis right now in the corn market, and I think it will continue. And so, yeah, out of all of it, I think merchandisers are going to be a little bit more nervous than the farmers are at this point, even though, I mean, farmers have kind of gotten used to it because starting last fall was when the weather really went south, and it hasn't improved since then. So we're just looking at another fall of weather not really playing nice.
Well, then you wonder if they're going to be able to, if it delays, then we're going to be in another situation where they can't get their spring prep work done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then,
All of Western Illinois, how many cornfields do we still see standing here when we come in? Is that going to happen again this year?
If we're going to really get into the weather, let's talk about the 5 to 6 feet of snow that we've got up in Montana.
Yeah.
It's got to melt at some point, maybe not this fall, maybe not, most likely not this winter, but next spring. And then all of a sudden that all has to come back down the Missouri River again. Mm-hmm. And that area still is flooded from last spring, and then it makes its way across over to the Mississippi, and then we have some flooding over there. So I think, there's going to be some issues. There's going to be some spring field work, possibly have problems. We don't know any of this, but, you know, all the pieces are in place.
I want to throw a curveball at our production team. I didn't give them this question ahead of time, but I want to ask it because I think what you're all talking about right now is very important, the weather scare, concern. We've got a question here from Jared in Mattoon, Illinois, and I know I've talked to a couple of you about this on the program as well, but based on limited harvest reports, reactions to season-long crop conditions, and USDA report, is this year further proof that the markets are now immune to weather scares?
I'm going to say that the traders have really always thought that no matter the weather scare, there's always going to be a crop. So that is what we're waiting to see with what is yet to be harvested. But again, as I said on the show, early indications are that, you know, yields are down significantly from year-ago levels. And now we know what this type of weather can do. And so if in the future we see this type of wet weather pattern emerging, I think that the marketplace maybe will be more in tune to react sooner because it will be in their memory etched in stone.
Believe it or not, I'm going to disagree with that. In the past, traders were much more reactive to weather and weather markets and so on. And it does take more now. And I think it has to do with there is this, number one, the buffer's always been, or the buffer recently has been, we've had so much on stock, you know, we have so much stocks on hand. But also, you know, with the technology that we use, with what producers are all doing to produce more, with the seed itself, with the science behind the seed, I think that does create a buffer all the way around, so they don't react as much. So if we come in and somehow this crop still yields when it all is said and done and USDA winds up changing it two or three years down the road as far as what production might be, I think we are going to see more. I think we're going to see longer periods here where we don't see these huge market weather market reactions.
Ted, you looked like maybe you had something to add.
Yeah, I think the big surprise for me this year was not necessarily that we were still able to yield given bad conditions. It was more, we still planted 10 to 15 million acres of corn after June 5th, which is amazing. And the fact that we got really lucky with the sort of Indian summer, not everybody, but most areas, I mean, some people got way too much rain, but we had enough time to get to the finish line. And that was that's really the corn crop saving grace this year. But it could have gone a lot differently. And those acres came from, you know, they said they didn't want to do it, and they were doing it, they were trying to structure it in a way where they weren't manipulating acres, but that's exactly what they did by MFP 2.0 saying it's going to be paid out the same amount regardless of what crop. Okay, well then we're obviously going to plant corn, and it doesn't matter if we're doing it in June 10th because we'll take our insurance and we'll take the MFP payment, and okay, that pencils out better than prevent plant. So the government bought 10 to 15 million acres of corn, and it just happened to get the right weather to, for the most part, make it to the finish line. Now, we still have 25% of North Dakota corn that is not dented yet. That's 850,000 acres, roughly. That's probably not going to make it, all right? That's going to be silage, and it's going to cut out for some of the feed demand. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just, wow, we planted 10 to 15 million acres of corn after June 1st. That's amazing to me.
Ted, I saved this question just for you because I know you're our big ethanol guy. We've got a question from Gary in Wilton, Iowa. Big news on the biofuels front, and wow, would you look at that? The corn market is down 2 cents. I know some say it's not a big deal, but who is really in control of the markets if it is not supply and demand?
Well, okay, control of the markets. Darren would say it's the USDA. No, I'm just kidding, buddy. No. Look, I don't think we were all that impressed with the deal that is being talked about for ethanol. And I think that it's more of a prove it type thing because we've seen ethanol production drop really, really sharply in the last couple of weeks. And stocks aren't really dropping. So what does that tell us? That ethanol demand is really under pressure right now. We've seen a ton of ethanol facilities shutter in the last 6 months. There's a significant ethanol problem right now. We also have a trade problem, by the way, and that's helping to facilitate our ethanol problem. But by giving the SREs the way we are, we're destroying RIN values. And if we're destroying RIN values, we're destroying ethanol demand. And we're seeing that reflected throughout the ethanol industry. We can't be doing both at the same time. We need to either fix the trade problem, fix the trade war, or fix the ethanol problem. Otherwise, this is going to be a big mess in the heartland of America when it goes to re-election, in my opinion. So. Yeah. The ethanol situation needs to get fixed very, very soon. Otherwise, Mr. Trump is going to, I think, feel the wrath.
So my interpretation of what was announced today is that, like, when you catch your kids taking cookies out of the cookie jar, and then you caught, you know, you're like, put it back. And so I feel like what happened today is the USDA, or not the USDA, the administration today said that we're going to be able to just go back to where we were before the snafu happened. So in essence, they're trying to just say that we're still going to be using like 5 billion bushels of corn towards ethanol instead of we were on the verge of losing over a billion bushels of corn demand. And so my interpretation was we're back to where we were supposed to be. And that's why I don't think the market responded. But if I missed something,
but
just let me know.
I just don't know if we believe that. Like we hear it and just in practice, I'm not sure that it works. It doesn't really do much to help RIN values. At least that's my current thinking, and I think that's what the market's feeling too. And that's really, I think, the biggest problem because the RIN values are very equivalent to what the ethanol demand is going to be.
Yeah, I think in a universe where none of these hijinks were even happening, I think you still might have some bearishness in the ethanol market just energy prices wise. You know, we see crude oil is down to $51 a barrel, and there's legitimate concerns about the global economy and the global use of energy and crude oil and fuels, especially China, right? If their economy is not doing well, energy prices won't do well, American energy won't do well, and American ethanol won't do well.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, I mean, if energy prices are low enough, that should encourage demand, and that from a blend standpoint.
Oh, demand, sure, but prices.
Right. But I mean, from a blend standpoint, though, if we're using more cheaper gasoline, if gas is cheap and we're using more, if that's encouraging demand, that should be better for the E10 and E15 blends. It doesn't really bode well for E85 necessarily. But the idea is that if we're cheap enough long enough, that should be good for ethanol demand. We'll see. I mean, right now, it's just there's no profit margins in ethanol. They've been negative for as long as, I mean, 2 years now. It's been bad.
So I know, Darren, you're not a USDA report guy, so I won't ask this question to you. But ahead of next week's WASDE report, is there anything, I guess we never can predict what the USDA will do, but is there anything that producers should be watching ahead of next week's WASDE?
I mean, there's a 600 million bushel range between high and low of the corn carryover estimates. So that tells you that we don't have any, analysts have no idea of what this thing's going to say. I know what I say. I'm the highest guess out there for corn carryover. I'm bullish corn, and I think ultimately we can see that number a lot lower than what my guess is for this report. But I'm worried that once again, just like we were in the July report and to some extent August report, I think we are way too aggressively bullish for what we are expecting from the USDA on this report. I just don't know if I see that. And I'm worried this is going to be a little bit of a disappointing report for corn. Might not be for soybeans. I really don't know what to think about soybeans, because are they going to reduce production numbers or not? And they have not. They don't have a whole lot of samples to go and test ear weight and pod weights. So this is going to be another.
Right.
This is going to be another implied ear weight and pod weight report. And based on how high those numbers were last time, I don't know if those are going to change for this. So I don't know why everybody's looking for such a low carryover numbers for corn in particular. The soybeans, wow. I really don't know what to say. I'm bullish soybeans longer term, but I don't know what this report's going to say.
I think the practical implications of what Ted is saying, and this was true in July. I remember farmers would come up to me in July. Everyone was really bullish about that report, right?
Absolutely.
Like, should we be buying futures? And generally, like almost always, that's a pretty bad idea for someone who is a producer who is already inherently long. You may have more bushels than you realize already, possibly. It's not, in my opinion, a great risk management strategy to get longer just because there's some idea that this might be a bullish report.
Agreed. Yes, thank you, Elaine. And the practical implications are, hey, ultimately, the story in corn might be bullish, but if expectations for this report, you don't need to be getting longer necessarily, especially buying futures. But if the expectations for this report are so very bullish, that makes it harder for us to get a bullish report. Right. That's just the bottom line.
Darren, Naomi, do you have anything that you would like to share as a final word?
Oh, there's so much I'd like to say, but I'll just leave it. I could care less about this report and the folks I talk to. I'm just telling them to watch the market, because as everyone's pointed out, nobody has any idea, including USDA, what these numbers should come in at. And if that doesn't instill everyone with a great deal of confidence going into the next monthly supply and demand report, and that nobody has any idea, except for maybe where the market's trading actually at this time. So that's all I'm looking for.
I think as you head into any USDA report, always be mindful of seasonality-wise, what the market has a tendency to do, be aware of, are we overbought or oversold on charts, and be just thinking about where you're at with your cash sales that you've already done, your overall weighted average production price, be thinking about what can make the market move higher or lower, and just always have a plan ready for no matter what the market can throw at you. So this next report coming up, we're expecting more of a supportive tone, but to Ted's point, we're going to need over-the-top friendly to get us to accelerate through the next resistance level on charts. So be ready for anything, and it's going to be a fun fall as we go forward.
Hopefully that it will. Hopefully producers can get rolling. Naomi, Ted, Darren, Elaine, thank you all so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Elaine.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Join us again next week when we'll explore how one coalition continues to push back against wind energy expansion, and Tom Fitzenmyer will join us at the Market to Market table. Until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.